I'm Shar Banerjee, and this is Books That Built Me. I'm an ex-executive turned to leadership coach, specializing in people managers. My job is to get people out of that manager headspace and into their leadership growth space. I typically work with clients to build their leadership DNA and their self-leadership muscles in either group programs or one-to-one coaching. But on this show, we're going to dive deep into the stories of other leaders. And it all starts with a book that they believe has fueled their passion, influenced their decisions, and these book lessons are now life lessons. Welcome to Books That Built Me. Today, I'm in conversation with Aaliyah Francisco. And in today's episode, we're going to discuss the book, The Mountain Is You by Brianna Wiest. I'm so glad you could join us. Here we go.
You gave me three books, and this was, you know, this made it to your top three. And so this is what we're going to be talking about. The Mountain Is You by Brianna Wiest. And we're going to kick it off. Like, I have a lot of neon notes, and I am so excited to just dive in and talk about all the things that impacted you and how, and, you know, how this has changed you. So just to, like, kick us off with, what is the one major concept that still resonates with you that you derived from reading this book in particular?
Oh my gosh, I love this book. It's maybe my top favorite. It's the top three for sure. It might be one of my favorite, the favorite book of mine. And the number one concept is mindset. It's all about shifting your mindset to create patterns of accountability and to live by design rather than by default. And the author does a beautiful job of speaking about self-sabotage and how we can recognize how we're being in self-sabotaging behaviors and how we can begin to dismantle that so that we're showing up in a way that we choose rather than a way that we're accustomed to. And that distinction is unbelievable. It's remarkable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I actually really love that they put some interesting words behind the concept of the mountain, which is yourself. And that's why the title is The Mountain Is You. You know, you have to overcome and climb the mountain. And this is your challenge. This is like your life's journey is this mountain, right?
That's right. Exactly. So that mountain is that inner journey of yourself. So the biggest challenge is your own mindset. And that's the mountain that we continuously climb. And she also points generously to the fact that this is a choice that we continuously make. It's not this arrival destination. It's the process and the journey that we get to enjoy, which I really love, because I think a lot of times mindset focused books or resources can be really focused on the destination, the arrival point. And this is about really being able to be present for the journey of your life, because we really only have the moment that we're in, the present moment. And we can often bypass that as a way to get to something that's better, a future aspiration, at the cost of the moment that we're in.
Yeah. In fact, at some point in the book, she says this so beautifully. She says that when you're panicked and your emotional charge is super, super high, you often confuse that point of that electric charge where everything's kind of spinning out of control. You confuse that for the end of your story, right? Instead of potentially the middle. Or you're catching yourself in the beginning and there's more to it. So I love that you've talked about recognizing that the journey is yours to discover, and it's yours to travel on in whatever pace and rate that makes sense for you. For me, self-sabotage was very interesting, because as soon as you open the book, they, you know, chapter one, The Mountain Is You, you have been self-sabotaged. And so instantly I was like, wow, that's very interesting. Like, I never really thought about that language or that potential terminology. And so for anyone who has not read this book, it's an if statement. It literally says, like, if there is a gap, an ongoing gap, which is important, if there's an ongoing gap between where you are today and where you want to be, and oftentimes your efforts are met with your own resistance, your own pain, your own discomfort, then you know that self-sabotage is almost always at work. And so on the surface, when you think of self-sabotage, like, you often, you know, you think like that's pretty, you know, that's not maybe something that you're doing to yourself. And so I love that she introduces this as something that most people are doing subconsciously. And this idea that it is a product. You know, we often think that self-sabotage is a product of, okay, I don't really like myself, or I'm not a confident person, or I don't have willpower, so therefore I'm sabotaging myself. But really, she talks about how this is happening in your subconscious, right? And she says that you self-sabotaging yourself is basically an unconscious need that exists within you that's being fulfilled by the self-sabotaging behavior. So at, mm-hmm. you know, at face value, self-sabotage sounds so harsh and mean and like low confidence and I'm not doing something because I choose not to. It's none of that. It's just that you have this unconscious need that is so deep within you that is actually being fed by the self-sabotaging behavior. And this was like paragraph number two. Mm-hmm. You know, so
if we unpack it a little bit, is to have self-compassion for this tendency that we all have. Mm-hmm. And as you pointed to us to look there, Shar, is that it's not necessarily those big significant stages that could be pivotal to your life. Like you think about self-sabotage, you might think about that as something distinctive, like you don't study for a test. Like that's something that you have an exam coming up and you don't study. That feels like a really obvious self-sabotage. Or you are about to go on a date and you don't show up for it, even though you've been looking forward to it. Like those are things that we can categorize as, okay, there's elements of self-sabotage there. It's more evident. But what you're alluding to is this sort of insidious way in which we are not even aware of the ways that we're doing it. And it becomes how we are moving through life. And we're doing this because it's a mechanism that works. And I want to make that, clear, because we don't do things unless there's a payoff for us. And Brianna points to this in the book as well, that it's behavior that's been keeping us safe. And essentially that's what the self-sabotage is there to do. It's very reptilian. It has a focus, and the focus is to keep you safe. It's not about your growth. It's not about thriving. It's about survival and safety. And so rather than berating, judging, or blaming yourself, we can start to soften around this idea that what is this part of myself that is trying to keep me safe despite my desire to grow, despite my desire to expand, despite my desire to have goals. And so when we start to soften around that, we can be more curious and have a sense of wonder rather than resistance towards it. And she offers that.
Yeah. And for me, because this was such a new concept, I really loved that she gave examples, because it helped me connect. And so she brings this up several parts in the book, but here are some really great examples of some self-sabotage limiting beliefs that people hold near and dear. So these are the beliefs that are the foundation to the behavior that we portray, right? The behaviors can be X, Y, Z, but when you distill it down, like these are the beliefs that we kind of hold near and dear. And so some of them are that when you meet a rich person, that all rich people are terrible people, or in order to be truly accepted by others, praise is the only avenue through which acceptance is possible. Another one is that people only connect with me when we're complaining about something together. Another one that she talks about is that suffering makes you more worthy. Like I almost want to pause as I say these, because these are real beliefs that people have grown up with, and they almost like protect it. There's this other one that, you know, it's very real, which is for every good thing that happens to me in my life, there must also be an accompanying bad thing. There's several other of these beliefs that she sort of lists out as examples. And I'm so grateful that she took the time to parse out probably hundreds of people's stories into these, you know, top 10 sort of overall limiting beliefs that we kind of hold near and dear. And they show up in different ways in the way that we act. And she talks very clearly about how we gain life skills in order to propel us forward, right? Like we put in our skills and we have that forward drive motion that acts like I'm learning something in order to be somebody, and therefore I'm moving ahead. And it's very interesting that she says the self-sabotage is also an arrow, but it points you backwards, right? And so there's almost this like tension, if you will, about the skills that you learn and then the self-sabotage that brings you back. And so I love that she has this visual of this forward motion and this backward motion, because at the end of the day, we all have these sort of arrows in play, but bringing awareness to which arrow is pulling you, or that the arrows even exist, I think, can bring so much enlightenment into your world.
I love that. Well said. Yeah, exactly. Even that the arrows exist. So recognizing whether you seem that the momentum's moving you forward or if it's taking you back is an invitation that she offers, which you're right. It's really a poignant place to look, because then we can start to get really honest. What she's offering is for us to be honest about the circumstances that we're in and to take radical responsibility for how these self-sabotaging behaviors are creating our reality. Sometimes we feel like it is happening to us. And Brianna is all about showing how this is a result of these self-sabotaging behaviors and beliefs, that you, these fundamental beliefs. Like, we might not ever think about suffering as worthy. Like, let me think for a second. Is that a belief that I hold? Yeah. Well, look at your circumstances. And that's a great indication to say, to show you where your beliefs are. So before you dismiss it or you deny it, it's more looking, an invitation to look at what's surrounding you, what is presenting in your reality. And that will give you an opportunity to see, what are my beliefs? What actually is my belief? Because if you desire wealth, if you desire financial abundance, and that's not the current circumstances that you're experiencing, as she says, then it's not, it's an opportunity for you to look and get really honest about, why are your circumstances not reflecting your desires at this point? And so it's really empowering, actually, is what she's offering, is empowerment to take accountability and aligned action towards the life you desire.
I felt like when I was reading this book, I don't know if you had the similar feeling, but I felt like I was going through therapy in so many ways. Yeah.
Did you like the book?
It was very, I mean, I loved the clarity around self-sabotage and how you're doing that, because I thought that uncovering that is such a mystery. And I was saying, like, sometimes when I would read this book, I'd have to put it away and go speak to my partner about what I'm learning. And then I would think back to, you know, a certain memory or two other memories. And I'm like, oh, these were the parallels. And this is the belief that I had. And this is when it got strengthened. And here it shows up in my life right now. And I recognize that it's there because of the patterns. Right? Because it's like something that happened to you and then it gets reaffirmed and so on and so on. So I really loved that piece of it. And I will say there are a couple other concepts that I thought were genius that we haven't yet touched on. As soon as I read them in my book, I'm like, genius. Like, so, so good.
I can't wait to hear what your thoughts were. I mean, I have so many. What I love about this book is it really offers the reader to take action. So I think, as you were saying, there's times where you have to pause, and that's really insightful of you too, because she also speaks about self-care and what that actually looks like. We think of self-care as all these elaborate things, productions that we have to do outside of ourselves, but really self-care being this internal recognizing of the feelings that we're having. So I love that you paused when it became something that felt like you wanted to share with your partner, something you needed to process, rather than maybe your tendency is to power through. I know that you've shared that you have a very perfectionist behavior, right? Which has served you well. So it takes something to be like, I know I want to finish this book, but I want to do it in a way that feels like it's nourishing me rather than powering through it.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let's go into the idea of hitting your upper limit. Mm-hmm. Essentially what this is all about is she refers Gay Hendricks, He basically has this concept called the upper limit, which is your tolerance for happiness. Mm-hmm. And essentially your upper limit is the amount of good that you personally are comfortable having in your life. And it's your tolerance, your threshold for having either positive feelings or experiencing positive events. And so we often think that we're programmed to seek happiness, right? Like, that's such a concept. Like, we're looking to be happy. I'm looking to be happy. But actually, Gay Hendricks is all, his entire thing is, no, there's a set point. There's an upper limit to your happiness. And you may think that you're seeking happiness, but what you're truly seeking is what you're most used to. And what you're most used to is that happiness level that you have. And so then I guess the other side of that coin is that when you begin to surpass your upper limit, right, you start to unconsciously sort of sabotage what's happening in order to bring yourself back to what's comfortable and familiar, which I thought was very, very interesting. And of course, you know, they talk about, you know, the self-sabotaging behavior could be pretty pointed or directed. And sometimes it may just show up as aches and pains in your body or your mind. And so really like, and for others, it may result in fear or resistance or guilt or anger or whatever it is. But that is essentially the idea that you are, you naturally have this upper limit to joy.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course they talk about how to resolve that and to, you know, and to push past that. But I thought that was such an interesting concept. And if I think back to my own life, I can certainly see times in which my younger self, I would certainly do this. If it's not familiar or comfortable, you resist it. Even when you're extremely happy, which sounds so crazy to say out loud, but we all do a version of that, right? Where you're like, this is almost too good to be true.
We all do that. We all do that. And I do love that. Thank you for pointing to the Gay Hendricks, the upper limit. And that's exactly what it is. It's just to expect that in this climbing of the mountain, of this arrival towards. And I love too, because Brianna speaks about how we can distinguish the intuition versus intrusive thoughts. And I want to share that too. But yeah, this upper limit, we do all get to that point where we will sabotage ourselves. And it's remarkable that you were able to look back and notice where you were doing that. Retrospectively, that's usually where we're able to have some insight. In the moment, it's deeply subconscious. So yeah, we aren't aware of the sabotaging behavior until we are. And that is why I love this book, because it starts to give language around, and I love too that she's pointing at how we can distinguish that. So you can look at your life. Your life is the biggest clue. You don't have to go searching for it. What you desire to have and what's currently showing up, that is the first place to look. And then once you look there, if there is a distance between that desire and where you are, then you can start to look into how some of those self-sabotaging behaviors are at play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for me, this one really struck, it just really struck a chord. I myself have had to do so much of this work in my own journey, which is to say that I think in my life, I have often felt that when you're suffering is when you're really moving ahead, that you can't actually truly be happy and chill and easygoing and successful at the same time. And so when I read this part, I realized that I have been doing so much of this in my life, you know, that when I hit those points of incredible joy and incredible like bliss, that there are versions of me that bring it down to, well, how can I suffer a little bit more because I will feel like I earned it. For me, the internal dialogue is when you suffer, you earn it, you know,
what a gift that you uncovered that. What a gift. And now you sit in the seat.
It was painful. Let me tell you, thank you for calling out the gift, but these things are painful to realize.
But it's not the pain isn't in the recognition. The pain is actually in the behavior. And then when we recognize it, we recognize how much pain we've been in. So yeah. I don't detract from doing the work because it can be painful when we look, but it's actually pointing towards the pain that's existing because we're shining a light on these behaviors. Yeah. So the alternative of not looking is to continue to live with this, you know, low grade discomfort that we're in,
totally,
pain, and to call it a life and to live by this upper limit that we're not able to move past despite our best efforts. And then once we have this knowledge and this insight, it's a game changer. You can literally change your entire life.
And towards the end of the book, you know, they talk, there's a fair bit of dialogue around micro changes, and they bring it back to this concept of, You know, whenever anything is new, and even if it's good, right? If anything is new, even if it's good, it will feel uncomfortable until it's familiar. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, must remember that. But then the real clincher for me was when they talk about the opposite effect, which is that our brain works in the opposite way, in that whatever is familiar is what we perceive to be good. Mm-hmm. And to really recognize that can pull us back, mm-hmm. right? Like, in order for our brain to feel good and comfortable all the time, that may mean that we're not necessarily progressing in pushing up that upper limit of our happiness.
There's another part in the book where she says pain is a gift, or she phrases it, I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially she's saying ways to find your needs on your own.
I remember that part.
Of overcoming self-sabotage.
Yeah, I remember that part.
I'm just going to read this right from the book. Aside from your own basic security, your needs are to be nourished, to sleep well, to live in a clean environment, to dress mm-hmm. appropriately, and to allow yourself to feel what you feel without judgment or suppression. Finding ways to meet these needs on your own is the foundation of overcoming self-sabotage. And this wasn't exactly the excerpt I was looking for. There's a part where she speaks about how it is, like, what a gift to have the discomfort, enough discomfort to propel you to seek change. Because what you're speaking of in that part that you were inviting us to look at is that our set points or our conditioning does feel comfortable to us. So that can look like a myriad of different things that we're allowing, or that we have been justifying in our lives because it feels comfortable to us. So where have we been? And there's a word and it's eluding me, but where have we been? I'm going to go back to allowing things to remain the same because it just feels comfortable. And when it gets uncomfortable enough that we start to want to change that pattern, it's a real gift, that discomfort, because then it allows us to see how we can shift and grow and transform that situation.
Totally. In fact, mm-hmm. she does such a great job with metaphors in this book, where she talks about how forest fires are essential because they open new seeds that require heat to sprout, or mm-hmm. that nature is most fertile and expansive at the perimeters where climates meet, i.e. mm-hmm. change, right? Mm-hmm. And she talks about even the moment a star implodes, it becomes a supernova. Like, you need, and even the mountains, like, mountains are formed when two sections of the ground are forced against one another. Mm-hmm. And she's so beautiful in her imagery as she explains this concept of mm-hmm. the gratefulness that you should have for all of these challenging emotions and perspectives in your life that give you the gift of allowing change to happen.
And let me draw this into a more personal experience. So I had a pattern of dating men who were unavailable on the level. And when I say men, I would say this pattern was between teenage years to early adult years, when I was in post-secondary school and just a little bit earlier than that. And that behavior felt comfortable for me because I actually myself had a fear of commitment. And if I got too close in the relationship, I wouldn't want to be in it. So that feeling of the guy being a bit of a chase actually felt alluring to me. Now, is that a pattern that I want to be in? Is that something that I want to create long-term in terms of a relationship that I have, or a standard that I want to be my set point? It absolutely was not. And so when I had awareness of that, when I started dating who my husband at the time, the relationship was healthy, but to the point it was so healthy. And so we related to each other in this dynamic that was so new for me and respectful. It felt so uncomfortable to me. And I didn't have the conscious awareness that I was in this discomfort because it was a new pattern. I actually thought there was something wrong with him. Even though nothing was presenting that there was anything wrong, it was just because my body hadn't alchemized to this new expectation of worth and appreciation and respect in relationship. And so in order for me to maintain that, well, I had two choices. I could either end the relationship and go back to my pattern, which was comfortable for me, or I could look and see, why do I feel uncomfortable in a situation that is nourishing me, that is loving, that's respectful? Where is that discomfort? And so, like a little investigator, the invitation is to go in and see, am I going to continue this pattern and allow it, the rubbing up against my discomfort, to have me flee the relationship? Or do I want to learn a way to be comfortable in what I want? And so that's what she's speaking about, is this discomfort that we feel in a pattern that we've actually attracted, that we've called it. I was calling in healthy relationships when I met my partner. That was something that I had seen my pattern and I was ready for that. But it takes something to be able to sit in that. And so what she's inviting you to do is to look at your own patterning, whether that's, you know, whatever area that is in for you, and to see where you are settling for something that feels comfortable, rather than doing the expansive, uncomfortable work to expand for something that you actually desire and are ready for.
I love that personal story, Aaliyah. Yeah. And it actually reminds me of my own, you know, the sentence that I had about, you need to suffer in order for it to be rewarding. And as you're talking about your partner and finding that love and just being uncomfortable in spaces that you're not comfortable, I remember very early in my relationship with my partner, we've been together, you know, more than 16 years now. But in the first year, I want to say, of us being together, where it was very similar to you, respectful and fun and so much appreciation and gratefulness and all the great things. And I was uncomfortable because I was like, where's the suffering, right? It can only be rewarding if there's suffering happening. And I remember being called out, because my partner would, I remember, said to me one time very, and I remember this so clearly, they said to me, you're creating a fight in order to fight.
Wow.
And I remember that even today, like 17 years later, because it challenges that underlying thing that I've been holding near and dear to my heart, that I need to suffer in order for this to be rewarding.
Well, first off, congratulations and shout out for your relationship, the length of your relationship. That takes something.
Oh,
that's
yes.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Thank
and
you.
It's 19 years, my partner and I, 12 years married, 3 children. Oh. And like you, I have a distinctive moment where I remember him saying, like, Aaliyah, you can't always be mad at me. And he said it so earnestly and so sincerely. He just said, Aaliyah, you can't always be mad at me, because it was me looking for comfort. And that friction that you spoke about, how she gives those beautiful analogies of all the tension that's required in order for something to transition, like from the cold to the diamond and so on. It requires this friction. But in that discomfort, we will rely on our old patternings. We will show behaviors that are going to self-sabotage ourselves because we're not comfortable in this new set point. So a lot of self-compassion, a lot of self-love, a lot of going gentle with yourself. And it gives language of communication, this book, which I really love, because it gives you the opportunity to say, is this authentic or is this self-sabotaging behavior?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just you a conversation with you, right? It's just you with you. And these mountains are all within. Oh, this is such an awesome, awesome read. I love that we talked about relationships. We talked about our career. We talked about our own self-development. I mean, really, with anything that you're going through in life, this book gives you the language to explore change.
Absolutely.
That's it for this episode of Books That Built Me. If you've enjoyed the episode, please take a moment to leave us a review. It really helps support what we're doing. Thank you for listening, and you can always find me on my LinkedIn at Shar Banerjee. If you're dealing with a leadership challenge, I would love to hear from you and have you join our community. And of course, I'll talk to you next Tuesday on a brand new episode of Books That Built Me.